Is it right to take sides in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? And has God himself taken sides?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I'm delighted to be with you and about to introduce a special guest. We're going to have a lively discussion, debate about Israel and the Palestinians. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. I just went to scratch my chin and it doesn't feel like it's there. I went to the dentist, get some cavities taken care of in the bottom right of my mouth and just got a little extra Novocaine there. So my chin doesn't feel like it's there, but I'm clear in terms of my voice. I can articulate. My lip is no longer totally numb. So we are good to go. But as I joke about that, I want to remind you yet again, as we turn our focus to Israel, to the Palestinians, to issues of great concern to many millions of people, let us not forget the funerals that have been taking place this week for the slaughtered children and teachers in Newtown, Connecticut. I was just reading more stories last night as more parents now are talking about the kids that they lost, family members they lost, and just looked at the pictures, and I'm sure as many of you did, had a good cry over things, and you just want to cry out to God to turn the clock back. Of course, we can't do that, but we want to be as redemptive and prayerful as we possibly can be. And then that reminds us as well, as we talk about Israel and the Palestinians, we're not talking about abstractions, we're not talking about theory, just theology, politics, we're talking about people. We're talking about moms and dads and kids and people with hopes and aspirations. What's God's heart on this? Here's a number to call, 866-348-7884. My guest is a friend here in Charlotte, James Michael Smith. He's also an amateur mixed martial artist, so if he gets in the cage and does that kind of thing, he's probably not afraid to have a friendly debate with me on the air. James Michael helps at one of the seminaries here. Gordon Conwell helps students in their biblical language studies. He's got an active blog and a number of books he's written, including his most recent one, You Want to Be Left Behind. James Michael, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire.
It is my pleasure to be here, Dr. Brown.
Great. Now, we're going to get into some serious differences in a little while, but we have a lot of things in common in terms of our core beliefs and then even a lot of our theology in terms of contemporary issues. Are you worried about tomorrow, the Mayan apocalypse, the end of the age, or is that a major concern?
Yeah, I'm not sweating that one. Somebody once said if the Mayans were good at prophecy, there'd probably still be Mayans around. So, but you never know. You know, the Lord could come back at any time, and so I'm not even going to pretend to be able to know when.
All right,
but plan on going to Georgia tomorrow to be with my family. So.
All right, same here. Yeah, and I'm confident that the world will not be ending tomorrow. All right, 45 seconds. Your book, You Want to Be Left Behind. Why did you write that?
The book is part of a series of books called the Dojo Discussions. My website, Disciple Dojo, is aimed at discussing and understanding issues that Christians reflect on not as much as they should sometimes. There's a lot of pop theology, folk theology, and one of the areas that I feel very strongly that comes into play the most is in end times related issues. So the book was actually a spinoff from a course that I taught called Apocalypse Now, what the Bible teaches about the end times. And the book is meant as sort of a supplement. It's a collection of essays and blog posts, some appendices, and also a translation of Revelation, the book of Revelation that I put together. So,
all right. Well, great, friends. We've got a link up on my Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, as well as on The Line of Fire. I put a link up as well to the book. We get back, we'll get into some serious issues of disagreement.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, before I forget, yesterday, the first hour, I talked about this horrific, tragic new version of the Bible called the Queen James Bible that changes eight passages from what they originally said to be pro-homosexual, or let's say remove the prohibition against homosexual practice. I wrote an article on this on the Queen James Bible. You can read it by going to charismanews.com. Just click on opinion, charismanews.com. Click on opinion, the Queen James Bible and homophobic interpretations, homophobic in quotes. Pass it on to your friends. 866-34-TRUTH. My guest, James Michael Smith, blogger, teacher, and now author as well. All right, let's do this. Let's go through very quickly. Just give me very short bulleted answers so that my audience will know where you stand on things. And then we'll start to get into our differences. Sure. And challenge each other's positions. I know you'll do it respectfully towards me. Of course, I will towards sure. you as well. But Israel today, modern Israel, is that a fulfillment of biblical prophecy?
The modern secular state of Israel that we have today in the Middle East, I do not believe can be pinpointed in the prophets as it stands now. I'm okay. somewhat agnostic on the future of the nation of Israel and the Jewish people as a whole, but I cannot say that the events of 48 or 67 were a direct fulfillment of anything in the prophets that I've seen.
Got it. Okay. You're not sure, though, about the future. Will there be a future regathering of a national Israel that's prophetic? You're not sure about that?
There are good arguments that Christians make that I respect, Christians who differ on that issue, and so I tend to be somewhat agnostic as far as what the future that Paul talks about when all Israel will be saved, what that actually entails and looks like.
Ah, all right. Now, I don't want to be insulting to you about being agnostic there. I do just want to point out that Paul specifically said, I don't want you to be ignorant of this mystery, brothers. In other words, he did want to communicate something to us, so perhaps...
Yes, he did.
Perhaps agnosticism is not the position you want to end up at.
In regards to pinpointing it with historical precision, I'm there right now.
All right, okay. But just understanding what Paul was saying, you don't want to end up agnostic there. Okay, but we'll get into this in more depth. All right, in terms of Israel and the Palestinians, mm-hmm. do you feel that Israel is treating the Palestinians fairly and really wants to dwell together in peace? How would you summarize your view?
I feel that a lot of Israelis do. I feel that most Israelis probably do. I feel that many of the decisions the Israeli government has making and the actions has made, excuse me, and the actions that they've taken in the past as well as today are directly undermining that claim. Particularly the settlements.
Okay. And do you feel that the Palestinians genuinely want to have peace with the Israelis and welcome them as partners in a two-state solution in the Middle East?
I feel, again, it's a mixed bag. I think that there are Palestinians, I know Palestinians who do feel that way, but I also know the majority of Palestinians are not sympathetic after the past 60, 70 years of what they've been through. So I think when you start to generalize, Israel wants this, Palestine wants this, you've already, you've overgeneralized and started to try to simplify and make black and white what is a complex issue with a lot of mixed opinions and mixed views among people.
All right. And on a fundamental level, since you know clearly where I stand on these issues, where do you differ with me?
I differ, one, in your characterization of how events unfolded leading to Israel and events pre-1948 and 48. We've talked before, some of the scholars who you've appealed to or historians, I think, are overly biased and one-sided. Not that they are falsifying information as much as they're leaving out key points from the other side. All right, so the narrative,
the narrative that I would understand was that in 1947, the Jewish leadership accepted the two-state solution, the partition plan from the United Nations, and vocally and openly said to the Palestinians, there's room for both here, let's live together in the land. The Arab leadership refused it. The surrounding nations in 1948, with declaration of statehood, declared war on Israel. Israel successfully and miraculously fought against that, hence the establishment of the modern state of Israel. In broad lines, that's what I hold to be true. What do you differ with in that narrative?
Well, there are a number of points. I think, first of all, it's been shown, and I could be happy to recommend some sources as well on it, that there was always an intent of entering into, among Zionists, particularly the founding and the main Zionist advocates, David Ben-Gurion and Herzl and others, that the goal was to remove a large number of Palestinians from specific areas, and the accepting of the partition plan was seen as a first step that we can claim a foothold in the land, and then eventually we can work out how we can move into and take the rest of the land. I think it was seen by Palestinians as European colonialism that they had been very familiar with since Britain had controlled the area. And so rightly, or at least I won't say rightly, I take that back, understandably, they did not want to see a sovereign European state established in their midst any more than somebody in Britain or any other country would want a sovereign Arab state created on their land. So they rejected that plan, and I'd also take issue or disagree with you of the miraculous nature. I think that given the military strength and the general education and planning and funding, it was far from undeniably miraculous.
So Six Day War, nothing miraculous about it. You've read all the accounts, all the testimony of how God intervened, the idea of all these enemies being taken down in that short a period of time. No sign to you whatsoever of God standing with Israel at that time?
I don't think so. When you're relying on your military might, your mighty Air Force, your funding from Western superpowers, I think it's much harder to argue that it was a clear and undeniable military victory, as we see, for instance, in throughout Torah and the historical books in the Bible.
Right. Now, of course, plenty of times when the children of Israel were marching out, they had armies, they had weapons, and it's not always the walls falling down in Jericho, as you know, or the praisers going out and God setting ambushes for the enemies in like 2 Chronicles 20.
Sure.
The problem, of course, that I have with your position is when I see Scripture explicitly promising a regathering, even in unbelief, as I see Scripture speaking of world hatred of Israel and Jerusalem and even attempts to divide the city and the land, as I see the hand of God manifest in so many ways, as I recognize the history of Islamic anti-Semitism and Jew hatred, as I see Palestinian leaders working with Hitler for the extermination of the Jews, as I see that very same attitude continuing through Hamas and even many in the Palestinian Authority as well, and as I know, so many Israelis working every way they can to have reconciliation meetings with Palestinian brothers and sisters. I know so many that have served in the army that talk about the ethical requirements and the extreme efforts that are made to work against civilian casualties and on and on. When I see all that and I see God working in a manifest way in front of our eyes, and satanic hostility in a manifest way in front of our eyes, and you can't see the hand of God in it or prophecy in it or God working in the midst of it, that troubles me because I see things unfolding historically.
Not God working in the midst of it.
No, of course we believe God's working in the midst of everything. I
understand
that. Absolutely.
I'm talking about undeniably and miraculous. I have yet to see that. In from what I've seen, what I've studied, our discussions that we've had, you and I, even specific.
How about the preservation of the Jewish people? Isn't that undeniably divine and miraculous? Isn't it exactly what God said would happen, that his people would be scattered, and yet he would not make a full end of them, even though he'd make a full end of many of the nations where he scattered them? Can't you see God's undeniable hand of activity in that?
I can absolutely, and this is a key point that you and I may differ on. I see a very, very strong difference between the Jewish people and the state of Israel. I don't equate the two of those, and many of my friends, and perhaps you as well, do, or at least make the state of Israel the symbol or the figurehead of the Jewish people, and I don't see that connection.
When we come back, right after this break, I want to put a question to you that I still have not received a satisfactory answer from anyone. Since God said he would scatter the Jewish people in his wrath and judgment, and then would preserve them, and would regather them, how have they been regathered if God scattered them unless he is the one regathering? That's where we'll start when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I've got a lot in common with my guest, James Michael Smith. His most recent compilation of articles, essays, blogs, and a translation of the Book of Revelation is his book, You Want to Be Left Behind. James Michael and I have had some friendly, intense dialogue, so we do this as brothers without any hard feelings either way. And I promise to speak truthfully and clearly. I'm sure he does as well. 866-348-7884. I don't know that I'll be taking calls, but feel free to call, and if the call's relevant, I'll try to get some calls in. All right, so James Michael, this is a question, honestly, it's very simple to me and very black and white to me, and yet I've not received a solid answer yet. God explicitly said to the Jewish people that because of our sin, he would scatter us around the world. He said
yes,
that.
Can you give me the specifics?
Excuse me?
That you're referring to.
Oh, okay. Well, there are many such passages, but
right.
You know, if we go, say, in the book of Jeremiah, for example, let's say we go to, chapter 30, verse 11, I'm with you and will save you, declares the Lord. Though I completely destroy all the nations among which I scatter you, I will not completely destroy you. I will discipline you, but only in due measure. I will not let you go entirely unpunished. And then from there into the 31st chapter, hear the word of the Lord, verse 10, you nations, proclaim it in distant coastlands. He who scattered Israel will gather them and will watch over his flock like a shepherd. The Lord will deliver Jacob, redeem them from the hand of those stronger. And it's clear in the context here, it goes beyond anything that happened in the return from Babylon. I mean, way
beyond
that.
I'm not sure about that. That's where we differ, Dr. Brown. Honestly, I think our hermeneutic is different on a number of levels, and that's one thing that I see a lot of in the regathering. In Hebrew prophecy, there's recapitulation where an event will happen, but it will be spoken of in cosmic or beyond historic terms, and I've always seen, and in the book I discuss that, and You Want to Be Left Behind, Jesus does the same thing with the Olivet Discourse, I believe, pointing to a future recapitulation, a fuller fulfillment of events that initially were speaking of events that have already happened.
Right, exactly. So, the fuller fulfillment, it hasn't happened yet. In other words, the thing that God spoke, that he promised, that he would scatter to all the nations, that he would make a full end of many of those nations, yet he would preserve the Jewish people as a people, and then regather us. Isaiah 11 speaks of that as well, regather us back to the land, and then Zechariah 12 speaks of the end of the age when Jesus returns, that there's world hostility towards Jerusalem and the Jewish people in the land. I mean, that's what we're witnessing in front of our eyes. So regathered Israel? That's the question. If God scattered in wrath, okay, and we cannot undo what he does. If he curses, we can't bless. If he wounds, we can't heal. The scripture is explicit on that. So if he, even putting aside many verses I can give you, if he scattered the Jewish people, who regathered them? How can they be regathered unless he did it?
Mike, a number of points that I think, because there's a lot of assumptions in discussions like this that never get teased out in soundbite form. A few points is, the Zechariah passages you mentioned, it also speaks of when, you know, Jews being in the land in Jerusalem. It also speaks of empires like Babylon or Assyria, for instance, who no longer exist. And I imagine you would say that those are referring to evil nations that will gather against Israel in general, rather than actually specifically Assyrian Empire somehow.
Where is that mentioned in Zechariah 12? I don't see that at all in Zechariah 12.
Throughout Zechariah. Do you read Zechariah straight chronologically?
Some of it is referring to things having to do with the return from exile. Some of it has to do with the end of the age. Some of it has to do with the time of Jesus. It's not just one little monograph on one subject. Zechariah 12 is explicit about the end of the age and the return of the Lord. Zechariah 14, explicit about it, the return of Jesus to the Mount of Olives and the Jewish Jerusalem being surrounded by enemies and God delivering. It's quite explicit, and it doesn't mention these other nations at all. It's amazingly explicit and detailed and with great future promise. But aside from a multitude of passages I could present to you, I still have a simple question. It's a very fundamental question, and so simple that I would think there's an answer. In the Torah, when God blessed, you couldn't curse. When he smote with sickness, you couldn't be healed. When he scattered, you couldn't regather. You know, just like when Jesus says, you know, he sets before us an open door no one can shut. If he scattered the people of Israel, the Jewish people in his wrath, and now we have been regathered, millions of us, back in the land, if he didn't do it, how could it happen?
How many Jews are in the land today versus not in the land today?
It's about 50-50.
Okay, I've heard different figures, but...
Well, let me say this. It's about maybe 60... 40, something like that, slightly over. But and it, you know, the numbers continue to increase.
Sure, sure. I've heard somewhere between, I think, 1919 and 2000, around 3.8 million Jews immigrated to Israel, and many more than that didn't and are still around the world and throughout Europe, America.
So you're saying there hasn't been a regathering?
I'm saying there has most definitely not been a full regathering.
Well, we're in the process of it, but see, that's
okay.
Who is doing it? Who has if God scattered, we were scattered. There were a handful of us, only thousands or tens of thousands in the land for centuries. We always had a presence there every year praying, next year in Jerusalem, next year in Jerusalem, the hopes and aspirations of the people. There was no Palestinian state. There was no Palestinian nationality. There were some Arabs lived there. There were others who lived there, many different nations, cultures. And then Jewish people always had a presence there, scattered for all these centuries and now regathered with a reconstituted state. We're still at the same point, and we'll continue our discussion. We're still at the same point. If God has not regathered these millions, how could they be regathered when God scattered? I still put that out. Anyone listening that agrees with my friend James Michael that doesn't see Israel today, it's fulfillment of prophecy, please, somebody answer my very simple question. Then how could they be regathered when God had scattered them? I think it's a very important point. All right, we're going to come back. We've got another half hour with James Michael. Those of you leaving us now can catch the entire broadcast at askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. There's also a link to James Michael's most recent book, You Want to Be Left Behind. If you missed yesterday's broadcast, we do have a very special resource offer. My 5-DVD series, including the debate with gay activist Harry Knox, Can You Be Gay and Christian? Practical, compassionate, biblical, normally $60 plus postage. Today, $30 postage paid. And James Michael will tell you, get the resource as well. I'm sure we agree wholly on this. 1-800-278-9978 1-800-278-9978 Hey, one more time, 1-800-278-9978 And don't worry about the Mayan apocalypse. We'll be coming your way tomorrow.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest on the air, James Michael Smith, he is a blogger and author. He works with seminary students, helping with biblical languages. He's worked with students that I have taught over the years. A genuinely good guy. And he has a compassionate heart for those suffering in the Middle East. Our perspective is very different in terms of who's largely at fault or the best ways to correct these problems. James Michael is also an amateur mixed martial artist. So sorry I had to jump in there, just the constraints of radio, as you know. But quick question for you on an unrelated subject. We'll put aside the question of believers in violent sports like MMA. Put that aside for a moment. That's
great
another discussion
for another show.
Yeah, absolutely. But have you actually gotten like in a cage kind of thing?
I wanted to clarify, I train in mixed martial arts here in Charlotte, leadership martial arts, but my competition background has all been mostly Brazilian jiu-jitsu and grappling. So it's the ground game aspect, not the punching and kicking.
Okay.
So
got
my competitions have not been in a cage yet, although I would love to get it maybe one or two matches before my body gets too old so that I can teach and coach effectively in the future. So
got it. And how old are you now?
I'll be 35 this year.
35. All right, but you still can be choked out and that kind of thing.
I have been choked out, and at the last tournament, I actually did choke someone out. So
I read about it. I read about it. The same move that had gotten you choked out, you choked someone else. All right, but not the punching, kicking, slicing guys, heads open with elbows, kicking
teeth out. None of that yet.
Got it. All right, is it still a fear thing to deal with this, the potential of what could happen to you?
No, it's like anything. When you train in something and it becomes normal, I train 5 to 6 days a week, so having people punching and kicking at me, it's not as scary and fear-inducing once you've done it and been in it, and I've done it all my life. So
got it, and then prepares you for radio debates, right?
Very much it does. That and the open-air preaching that I did in college, both of
that. Yeah, that would do it. That would do it. Oh, okay, let me shift gears, okay?
Can I make one point to what you said?
Please,
just
go ahead.
The talk of regathering. I want to make clear where I stand. I wouldn't dispute that God may be in the process right now of regathering Israel, the Jewish people, back into the land. What I dispute is that the modern secular, extremely secular in origin, state of Israel or the Zionist movement of the 20th century, I very much dispute that is something that God is enthusiastically backing. I think that God allows events to happen. I think that he allows in a larger timetable than we work on. So I don't rule out that God is involved right now, but I don't, you and I differ in our hermeneutic, I think, in terms of which passages of Scripture we see as literal and which we see as prophetic symbolism or apocalyptic imagery, or in Zechariah, when it talks about the horses on their bells and the pots and the
there could well be a literal future temple. There are many texts that point in that direction. It could well be, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's what unfolded. But my hermeneutic
would you
is
say
simple,
when God says in Zechariah 12, I will keep a watchful eye over the house of Judah, but I will blind all the horses of the nations. You would say those horses of the nations may not be literal horses. It could refer to, it means their armies or their strength.
Yeah, as long as we don't end up, and who knows what's going to happen at the end. I've read stuff that there are going to be horses, but that's the least of my concerns. This much I know, there is and will be a Jewish Jerusalem that will be attacked by the nations. There will be national repentance, and Jesus will return to a Jewish Jerusalem. Of that, I have no question whatsoever.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I am having a friendly debate with my colleague here in Charlotte, James Michael Smith. We've intersected with some of our work at Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, and he's passionate about Israel, Palestinians, Middle East, as am I, but we have different perspectives about what God's doing, as well as recent history, as well as current justice issues on the ground. 866-34-TRUTH, thanks for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. All right, James Michael, since we're both serious students of Scripture, we could obviously continue to press in on individual verses and passages, but to try to cover a bit more ground and air out some of our differences here, let's talk about, in general, the refugee situation. I want to throw out a few things to you, all right?
Okay.
Gaza under Egypt was Jew-free, number one, and was absolutely not developed. The West Bank under Jordan was Jew-free and was also not developed. Both of these under Israeli control have been much, much more developed up until the Intifadas, then of course up until Hamas in Gaza. Why was there, I'll throw out three questions for you, okay? Why was there no attempt to assimilate the Palestinian refugees just as Israel assimilated its Jewish refugees from around the world? Why was there no attempt to do that, even some expelled from other Arab lands, during these decades? That's question number one. Mm-hmm. Question number two, why was Gaza so terribly neglected when it was under Egyptian control after 48? Second question. Third question, why are there refugee camps for the Palestinians in countries like Lebanon? Why are there refugee camps? Why haven't these people been assimilated fully into the Arab population?
All right. Awesome. Good questions. The point that I will make before answering all three, the one simple point, is that refugees under international law are to be allowed to return to their homes if they choose, whether Jew or Palestinian. The Jews, the hundreds of thousands of Jews who were driven out of Arab lands in 48 and the events over the past century should have absolutely been allowed to return had they wanted to. I know that a lot of them were assimilated, like you said, into Israel.
Right, they were expelled. Right. They were violently expelled.
They were.
I mean, let's be realistic.
Many of the Palestinians were. Any refugee under international law should be allowed to return to their home if they choose. When it comes to why the Arab nations haven't let them assimilate, one, there's a lot of blame to go around. I don't want your listeners who don't know me to think that I am a Palestinian apologist. My position, and I make it clear, and you want to be left behind, chapter 10, should Christians stand with Israel? My position is no, Christians should not stand with any modern political secular nation. Jesus' kingdom is not of this world, and all secular nations are a mixed bag. That being said, the refugees, if they want to be assimilated in these Arab countries, should absolutely be allowed to be assimilated, and it's the fault of the leaders of those countries for not letting them. However, if they want to return to Israel, to their homes, their ancestral lands, under international law, as far as I know and as far as I've seen in all studies of this, they should have that right to return, or they should be compensated for the land that they've lost. I'm not an international law scholar, obviously, but
right. So of course,
I know,
the bigger question is if the refugee problem was caused by poor Arab leadership. Again, we differ on that. I say a small minority of Palestinians were violently expelled in the war against Israel, and the vast majority fled based on Arab leadership miscalculation and Arab leadership trying to wipe out the Jewish people. So again,
sure,
have a fundamental difference there. But once this erupts, though, let's just understand. Once this erupts, you have roughly 800,000 Jews expelled from surrounding Arab and Muslim lands. They flee to Israel, and Israel, a fledgling state, basically absorbs them, all of them.
You have roughly 600 that they drove Palestinians out of, or
no,
Palestinians
not
fled.
No, they did not primarily drive Palestinians out. Palestinians primarily fled based on wrong counsel from the Arab leadership, who said, we will destroy the Jews. The Jews sent out every kind of leaflet, radio announcements. You know, you've read some of the quotes about it. You just don't think it's an accurate picture, saying, stay here, don't flee. We are neighbors. We are friends. We can work together. Don't flee. The Arab leadership said the canon cannot distinguish between a Jew and an Arab. Get out of here, and we drive the Jews into the sea. You can regather your lands. And others just fled because there was war going on. But Israel did not start that war, and Israel was not asking for it. If you just listen to read the public quotes from the Muslim leaders of that time, 1947, and the public quotes of the Jewish leaders, they're saying two completely different things. The only Jewish concern was to have a Jewish majority in where they lived. That's they felt was necessary to have a true peoplehood and statehood. So again, we differ
right
on the history.
And
there,
that in and of itself is illegal under international law. That is to have a ethnic majority, meaning to transport people out of
their
territory.
It wasn't transport. It was not transport. That was something that was proposed. And at one point, in one letter, Ben-Gurion responded and said, yeah, that could be done. But that was never the intended policy. It was simply the goal. It would be through Jewish migration. That's how they wanted to do it, through Jewish migration.
I very much, again, I think that that is the story that some scholars would give me, who you see as authoritative. I disagree. I think when you read things by, say, Nur Masala, the expulsion of the Palestinians, not even talking about super out there scholars, but just in general, there was a desire to have a Jewish land and to transfer. There was talks of transferring to Iraq, talks of transferring to the Transjordan.
Who brought up
transfer?
Who brought up transfer? Who brought up? There was only one little segment of time when the transfer solution was proposed, and Ben-Gurion and others responded to it in terms of the Jewish leadership. But see, here's what troubles me. We can differ about the data, right? We can read history differently. But what we can't differ with is this. Things have unfolded a certain way. Gaza, under Egypt, these are fellow Arabs. These are fellow Muslims. Where is the compassion to care for these people? There wasn't. This was rather to be left as an open sore to make Israel bad.
But how does that exonerate Israel in any way? How does the badness of one's enemies exonerate bad behavior on the part of another people? In other words,
it's real simple. I'm saying that the reason for the refugee crisis lies on the shoulders of the Arab leadership and their failure to the people. And if Israel had been worked with and cooperated with, there would have been a Palestinian state since 1947-48. And to the extent that Israel has had control of these areas, be it Gaza, be it West Bank, that there has been economic prosperity and increase for the people there, just like Israeli Arabs have more liberties and freedoms than any Arabs in the Middle East. So I'm saying we can differ on the history.
Sure,
since we have
sure.
the same players alive today, we look at the present and yeah. we see the way the Palestinians have been treated. So here's what I'm saying. We see what Israel did with Gaza up until Hamas control. We see the prosperity that came there. We see the increase that came for the people. We see the drop in unemployment. I mean, I've got detailed economic stats in front of me. I can quote, when it was under Egyptian control, why didn't they do that? So I'm saying the ones that have actually treated the refugees better and have worked towards a solution when given the possibility and without having their own people blown up, it's the Israelis.
I'm surprised to hear you say to bring up economic advancement and employment and things like that as any sort of justification in a moral sense, given your nature as a conservative critic of American culture, the most economically advanced nation in the world. It's an interesting, I have not heard you use this argument before, but, you know, the Roman Empire, their whole claim to fame was Pax Romana. We're going to give you food, we're going to take care of you, we're going to give you safety. You just do everything we say and live exactly how we tell you.
But that's not the case.
That's not a morally acceptable solution to any people.
Israeli Arabs have had pro-Hamas rallies in Egypt. They can burn flags. They're in the Knesset, the parliament. They have a Supreme Court judge. They've got, no one's telling you got to toe the line or we're not going to give you your liberties. What I'm saying,
I'm not
talking about
Israeli Arabs. We're or at least I would talk about Palestinians in the West Bank and
all
in
right,
Gaza,
so
not the ones in Israel.
Palestinians in Gaza under Israel have fared far, far better than under Hamas. And if there was a genuine attempt at peace, and I've got a break, so I don't want to cut you off. We'll come back
all
to
right,
you.
Go ahead.
If there was a genuine attempt at peace on the part of the Palestinians, their liberties, their freedoms, their quality of life, their economic prosperity would skyrocket compared to where it is today. Check out George Gilder's Israel Test. I don't think I've mentioned that book to you, James Michael. George Gilder, The Israel Test. Back with more.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I wish I had more time, and James Michael, as you know, I'd gladly do this in a face-to-face public setting. I know you've been trying to get some other leaders, scholars involved, but would love to get into this discussion in more depth. We're talking about Israel and the Palestinians. James Michael, we both want to see justice. We both agree that neither side is blameless. Even when I talk about standing with Israel, I don't mean sanctioning everything Israel does, and I'm constantly calling the people of Israel to repentance, both the secular and the religious. And my heart goes out to anyone suffering, be it a radical Muslim kid that's raised in that environment, be it a dear Palestinian Christian brother that sees Israel as a hostile force. So before we're done, hopefully we can say a few things of agreement on this topic. But do you get the point I've been making is that we see the ongoing treatment of Palestinians by Arab countries, say refugee camps in Lebanon. I mean, why are there refugee camps in Lebanon? Surely these people cannot say we would much rather live in refugee camps in squalor in Lebanon than be incorporated into the larger Lebanese population after decades and decades in refugee camps. I mean, that can't
right.
be
the,
their
the
best
Lebanese
choice.
The Lebanese government should make efforts to repopulate and to assimilate any of the refugees that would desire that. But the refugees themselves, as far as I know, want to come back to their homes, which is legal under international law. And where my rub against Israel's behavior, especially in recent decades, is where Israel seems to accept international law in things like the original formation of the state, but then neglect or skirt or protest international law when it's something that some of their leaders oppose, like not building settlements in land that's supposed to belong to the Palestinians, which is my number one. I think it's the biggest single issue that prevents peace over all others. Israeli commentators agree with me on this. This is not a anti-Israel position to take at all.
But see, like I've told you many times, if you could recognize God's hand in what's happening, and if you could recognize the larger justice issue is on the side of the Israelis, then we could discuss particular issues of criticism.
I don't think we need to do that, Dr. Brown. Honestly, God doesn't. You can address an injustice and an immorality as an immorality and an injustice where it is, and work from there towards common ground. It's not a case of first believe me and side with me, then we can get to these issues. Let's start.
Let's do this then. Of course, in no way do I see the settlements as immoral, and the fact that some Israeli commentators agree. You've got Israeli commentators all over the place. For those that don't know Israel, you talk about political commentary. You talk about you have anti-Zionist Israelis. You have Israeli professors calling for boycott of Israeli products. So if you can't find an Israeli commentator to agree with you on something, that would be bizarre. But I disagree with your analogy. Let's look at it like this. If I was coming in threatening your life with a gun and a knife, and you had pinned me down to the ground, and you knew if you let me up, I'm going to grab that knife and stab you. You kicked the gun away. I'm going to grab that knife and stab you. And someone comes in and says, James Michael, let him out of that chokehold. Let him out of that chokehold. It's like, wait. This is self-defense, and the reason for the chokehold is because he's trying to kill me. Unless I recognize that first, I may get you killed. So it's the same thing here.
I disagree. I think that's a wildly simplistic analogy, Dr. Brown, that works at an individual person self-defense level, but certainly not at a national political level. I think it's an incredibly simplistic. It has emotional
appeal. Well, it's simplistic when you call settlements immoral and say that that to me is not just simplistic. That's insulting.
I would love to discuss that issue more because that to me would be a great discussion for us to have.
Fine, but the fact is the broad strokes you cannot deny. The broad strokes of the mismanagement by the Arab leadership, the broad strokes of Islamic sentiment wanting to wipe out Israel, the broad strokes of Islamic leaders working with the Nazis, the broad strokes of the mistreatment of the refugees by Egypt and other surrounding Arab nations, those can't be denied. And the fact that Israel...
The details of them can absolutely be challenged because I think a number of them you overstate, and we don't have time to get into it now, but I would love to address that at some point because, again, it's the details are important. The facts on the ground, as our friend Porter Speakman would say, they influence how we see the broader picture and vice versa.
Yeah. And the facts on the ground, I see categorically differently, and I see 90%+, if not 99% of the problems being the Muslim and Arab leadership, not the Israeli leadership and not the Israeli people. And on that, I mean, I know so many at work in this, and what struck me is when I've talked to so many Jewish believers in the land, how many work together with Palestinian Christians and with Arab believers in other parts of the world, and how many have a heart of peace and love, and all of them don't want to send their kids into the military and would love to see a peaceful solution. Hey, listen, remarkably, as talk radio goes, we are out of time. We've got to air some differences in a lively way. I'm happy maybe to get a friend on from Israel to discuss settlements another day if you think you could do it well or get someone that you think is even better qualified that's specialized in it.
There are many people better qualified, I'm sure. It's my passion for it, obviously, but my qualifications, again, I don't claim to be an expert. But like yourself, I do want to see truth. I want to see justice. I want to see reconciliation. Where we differ is I think I am much more distrustful of any secular government at the moment.
And I would say I'm much more trustful of God at work, especially when he's laid things out in advance. My hermeneutic is this: if he said he will do something and has made it unconditional, then it will ultimately come to pass. And if it's only partly fulfilled in the past, the rest is yet to come. Hey, we've got to run. Just give our listeners your website, though.
I would love, please stop by. It's super easy to remember. It's jmsmith.org.
All right, JM, and no dashes, nothing.
No www, just
jmsmith.org. And get into his blog. We differ on some things, but agree on
DVDs, CDs, free downloads.
Great. We agree on far more. He's an artist, too. Hey, we got to run, but thanks for joining me today.
It was my pleasure, Dr. Brown. I'll see
All right.
you soon.
God bless you. All right, my friend James Michael Smith, glad we could have this debate. Friends, please take advantage of the special resource offer. It's not Israel-related today. My 5-DVD series, normally $60 plus postage, is $30 postage paid. Can You Be Gay and Christian? It is a must-watch series. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, I recognize that God has scattered my Jewish people. I recognize that God has kept my Jewish people. And I recognize that he has also regathered us. I'm confident that he will turn our hearts to embrace Jesus, the Messiah. Of Jesus, he's constantly focusing on the poor and needy. What does that mean to us today?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on the Line of Fire, but we are going to be deviating from our normal schedule and bringing on a special guest to talk about something really, really important to every one of you listening as we're coming into the Christmas season. Even for those of you who don't celebrate this as the time of the birth of Jesus or don't get caught up in a lot of the holiday, the giving and the buying frenzy and all of this, you recognize it's a time that things slow down around the world. You recognize it's a time when people think about life more deeply often, family time and all of that. And most of our society is giving gifts and spending a lot of money. And if there's ever a time for us to look beyond ourselves, there's ever a time for us to look at others in need, there's ever a time for us to say, okay, I don't need a fourth special carrying case for my iPad to supplement the three others I have, and I don't need an 11th copy of this thing that I have in 10 other dishes. You know, maybe there's someone else in need. This is a time to do it, and perhaps even in a sacrificial way. So I'm going to be introducing a special guest to you momentarily, Kevin McCullough. And we want to talk about a special opportunity for you, something that you can do to get involved in helping kids in a very tangible life and death way that'll bring a smile to your face, that'll bring a smile to the face of God, that'll bring a reward in heaven, and that will literally save a life. So we'll be joined by Kevin McCullough shortly. Those of you who heard my broadcast yesterday know in the first hour, I talked about the King James Bible, a new edition of the scriptures that of the King James that takes eight famous passages that clearly speak against homosexual practice and changes them, revises them, rewrites them to take that issue away so that a practicing gay or lesbian person can say, hey, I love the Lord, I love the Word, and now these passages don't bother me anymore. What a deception. I wrote an article on that last night. It's called The Queen James Bible and, quote, Homophobic Interpretations. You want to read it and you want to share it with your friends. Go to charismanews.com. That's C-H-A-R-I-S-M-A, charismanews.com, and just click on Opinion. You can read that there. Also, let's remember we're about to talk about children in need. Let's remember as we're gathering with family, as we're celebrating Christmas, those who do that, there are families right now in agony. There are funerals taking place this week in Newtown, Connecticut. As I mentioned in the first hour, just reading more of the stories as more parents are coming forward and seeing more pictures of the kids. And I just looked at them. Our youngest granddaughter is six and looked at the pictures and just had a good cry and said, oh God, you wanted to turn the clock back. You just, no, don't let this happen. It's already happened. We want to continue to carry those people in our hearts and pray for God's grace and mercy. I wrote an article, came out earlier in the week on the Newtown Massacre and the pain of God. And someone sent me a quote from an article by Elie Wiesel, Holocaust survivor, Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel, talking also about God's pain through human suffering. How does God feel about this? Well, one thing God's passionate about, friends, very passionate about, is care for the widow and the orphan. Something that Jesus, Yeshua, our great teacher, spoke about often. My special guest, Kevin McCullough, is going to tell you what you can do in a practical, simple way to make a difference. Stay with us.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Normally Thursday is 30 Jewish Thursday, and I found out about an opportunity to have a guest on the air with me, nationally known radio host, author as well. And when I was told what the subject matter was about and could we preempt our normal programming, you better believe it. Absolutely. And my guest, Kevin McCullough, you may have heard in his own radio show. Actually, there are three different shows he's involved with, one with Steve Baldwin. And he's an author. You'll read his writings on internet as well. He's passionate about many things, but he's carrying a burden now. Not just kind of a sentimental little burden, but a life and death burden for orphans whose lives can literally be saved through your help as we demonstrate our faith by our works. Kevin, been a busy day for you. Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. It's good to be with you. And a big shout out to your New York listenership as I got my start in radio, really cutting my teeth on AM 570 WMCA, so we love the AM 570ers in New York City, but thanks for having me today. This is a passion. I will be on the air something like 18 hours today advocating for this. We're trying to feed 800 children that will die if we don't feed them, and I appreciate your support for this.
All right, let's cut to the chase, Kevin. You sure this is not a hyperbole? They're going to die if we don't feed them. Send your money now. They're going to die if we don't feed them. And 90% of the money gets pocketed by rich executives, and these kids are not in such dire need anyway.
It's amazing. It's amazing how jaded we get, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's something. There are ministries out there, charities out there that have ripped people off. But let me give the hard facts on this. There are 160 million orphans in the world. 60 million of them tonight will go to bed, and they will be somewhere in a 72-hour window between meals. Now, they're not meals like you and I think of. You know, we may think of a nice big plate of food at supper time, regular, every day. Now, these kids are boiling tree bark and trying to eat grass or anything else they can find that just to satiate the emptiness that's in the stomach. And these are orphans that have no mommies and daddies. They have no government welfare programs. They have no EBT cards. They had no they have no food stamp programs. These are children on the continent of Africa, in the countries of Central America like Guatemala and other extremely impoverished areas like Haiti and some of the Caribbean island areas. These are people in India and in Southeast Asia where children have been in many cases made lesser than humans if they come from a certain section of ethnic groups there. Dr. Brown, what's going on is these children are being totally forgotten and left and kicked aside, and it's not any of their fault. Their parents have died because of disease, the AIDS pandemic on the sub-Saharan continent of Africa. Whole villages in places like Sudan and south of there where you've got whole villages that have been ravaged by war first and then the AIDS pandemic, and you have 10-year-olds that are heading households of siblings that have, you know, four to six kids that 10-year-old is responsible for. This is what we're talking about, and it's desperate. And you were talking about Christmas Day, and I know people have different traditions and they observe Advent in different ways, and everyone listening may have their own take on traditions that they do. But one thing is similar kind of in all the households, be they Messianic or not, that are listening to you today. There will be a gathering, most likely, somewhere around the 25th of December, in which large numbers of family members will get together and they will have a table full of food in front of them. And they will sit there and they will eat and laugh and they will enjoy one another's fellowship and company. They will hug and they will kiss and they will share everything that's good about that day. And then comes Grandma. And she serves another helping of potatoes and whatever else may be on the table and say, here, please eat a little more. You haven't had enough. And they'll literally be so full that they'll go into a food coma sometime in the middle of the afternoon. But my thought keeps going back. What if there was a child on the doorstep of that house that didn't have enough to wear, that was not warm enough for that day, had not eaten in 72 hours? I don't think there's anyone listening to Line of Fire right now from WAVA in Washington to WNIV in Atlanta to WMCA in New York to anywhere else on the Truth Network, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think there's anybody listening to the sound of my voice right now that would turn away a child on the doorstep of their house that, mm-hmm. that came there with no mommy and daddy and they were hungry. And yet, Dr. Brown, today we know that there's going to be 800 critical care orphans that unless we supply a 25-cent meal that they won't eat on Christmas Day, and unless we supply a $92 gift, they won't eat for every day between now and next Christmas. But with 25 cents and with $92, we can solve both of those problems for these 800 kids.
All right. Let's look at this practically and step by step in terms of what we can do. I just got back from my 20th trip to India. The ministry we work with there, sponsors orphans, cares for them. The kids just had a major breakthrough. These are the kids in the children's home from ages 3 and a half up to about 15, 16. As long as we've been involved with the ministry there, they've slept on concrete floor, and they just got beds. Now, they sleep multiple kids in the beds, but for the first time in their lives, they've slept in beds. And we've gone out in some of the villages and seen the living conditions, and it's staggering.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going the first time, beggars on the train. I mean, you actually have sometimes in extreme cases, a beggar family, when a kid is born, they break the legs so that the legs will grow back disfigured because the kid will be able to beg better. That's the only way to potentially live. I mean, it's overwhelming. You see it in your own world.
It's
you feel
inhuman.
Guilty. You don't know what to do. And it's only too staggering. You want to help, but you don't know what to do. You almost get numb. But you're saying there's something very practical. You're not saying we're going to feed the whole world right now. And you're not saying don't do anything for your families, don't ever have a nice meal again. You're saying here's something we can do with the goal today that at the end of this day, there are going to be 800 kids who are going to eat, who are going to have hope, who are going to be alive. Let's go through this. What are you asking for? What do our listeners need to do? How can they do it?
I just want the Line of Fire listeners, Dr. Brown, to remember that every 90 seconds, one of these orphans perishes, and it's from a preventable cause. There's enough food on the planet. We just need to get it to them. Mm-hmm. If they dial 800-503-1948, 800-503-1948, 800-503-1948, if it's easier to remember that way, they can give a gift of 25 cents, $25, $92. $92 will feed one of the 800 children from Christmas of this year through Christmas of 2013. If they don't want to wait online, they can get. They can go online. If they don't want to wait in the telephone line, they can go online to dogood.com. We tried to make it really simple for them to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Dogood.com. It takes less than 60 seconds to make a gift that way. So far, since we've been on the air about 5 o'clock this morning, we're at about 275 children that have been reached. But Dr. Brown, for the rest of the hour that you're on the air today, a single donor is willing to match every child that Line of Fire listeners is willing to feed. If,
wow.
if they are willing to rescue a child between now and the end of your broadcast today, another single donor who wishes to remain anonymous, doesn't want any fame or glory for what he's done, he just wants to give more food to the children. He will match every child that Line of Fire listeners help today. So we need your help. 800-503-1948, 800-503-1948.
All right, and I just went to the website myself, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, and forget, I'll, whatever heavenly reward I get, I'll forfeit here, okay, by talking about it. But I'm sitting here thinking, okay, how can I possibly even think for a minute and justify not immediately spending $92 to sponsor one of these kids for an entire year? I mean, it's
and that
kind
just
of
turned
blind.
Into two because of the anonymous
right,
smash.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So as soon as we get our next break in a minute, I'll just fill out the form rather than type as you're talking.
Dr. Brown, can I confess something to you?
Yeah.
In between a break, just a second ago, I'm in the studios of the Truth Radio Network out of North Carolina today. I went back to the Pepsi machine, and somebody had given me $1 to go get a Diet Mountain Dew because I need some caffeine to stay awake for these 18 hours. And when the change popped out of the machine, a quarter rolled under the machine. And in the past, I'm like, I'm dressed in my nice jeans. I don't want to get down on the floor and look for with all the dust bunnies that are under there.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing that went through my head was, Kevin, That's 25 cents. That's someone's Christmas meal that you're talking about today. You can't let that go. So not only did I pull it out, I went back to my computer and I fed one more child today. Because my wife and I, we have a goal of a number that we're trying to reach before the end of the year. And so far, God's been very good at allowing us to do that. But, friends, it is so important that that wasted 25 cents that I was willing to throw away could be the very meal that saves a child's life.
All right. So friends, if you don't have $92, if you have $5 or $10 or $20, that immediately will get double. But I think most of us listening can go for it, or many at least, and sponsor a kid for a year, which becomes two kids. So go to dogood.com right now or call 1-800-503-1948. Let's really make a difference.
Fire we want, for fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, 2 minutes was enough to make the donation for the year and to have plenty of time to get back with my guest, Kevin McCullough. The number you want to call, 1-800-503-1948, 1-800-503-1948, or do good. .com. Look, if you feel guilty right now and you're thinking, oh, I got to do something, fine, do it out of guilt. That kid is not going to know the difference between a meal that was provided for him or for her because you felt guilty or because you felt generous or because you inherited $1 million or because you had 50 cents to spare. Just seriously, let's all do something and let's all encourage our brother Kevin. What's your cut on this, Kevin? I mean, what's your game? Why are you doing this?
100% of what we raise today, Dr. Brown, goes to feeding children. So that's there's nothing that we get out of this. The Do Good Coalition was formed in a somewhat untraditional way. Three talk show hosts, myself, Stephen Baldwin, Danny Johnson, came together and said, we know that the Lord has told us to feed orphans. We've all traveled to the third world extensively. We've seen kids on multiple continents that are starving. They have the orange hair, the distended bellies. They have that longing look that you have when you have severe malnutrition. You're kind of in a daze. You don't know really what's going on sometimes. And we've all cried and stayed up late, sleepless nights about it. So we said, what can we do? So in April, we said, let's try to feed 2012 kids before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And we thought it would take us the rest of the year to feed 2012 kids. And we did it in, I don't know, the listeners to our shows did it in about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so then we told some of the other people in the broadcast industry about it. Say, hey, you want to help? I mean, this is kind of cool. We're changing lives and healing. People are getting healed. And I'll explain why with the recipe of the food that we're giving them. But it's really a cool thing. So then Focus on the Family and Citizen Link and the Wall Street Journal and some other people all started talking about it and telling other people about it. Before we knew it, we were closing in on close to 5,000 orphans fed for the entire year to come. And when it got down to this time, we said, you know what? Let's not be done with the year yet. Let's try to feed another 800 kids. And so we went back to our feeding partners, King's Ransom Foundation and Food for Orphans, and we said, who still needs help? And so we came up with 800 names of critical care orphans, the ones that the pastors on the ground that we work with. We don't go through government bureaucrats, and we don't work with, the GSOs and all the people that try to take cuts out of these types of things. We've got food suppliers. We do food packing events where people come together in church gyms and they put the meals together, and then we get them to the people that are on the ground. And that's how simple it is. 25 cents. Now, let me explain why people that are malnourished need healing and not just feeding. Mm-hmm. The orange hair, the distended belly, that's all a sign that the body is cannibalizing itself. It's doing things to itself that it's not supposed to do because it's desperately looking for something that the body doesn't have, and that is calories and nutrition. Mm-hmm. The recipe that we use in the Do Good Coalition, three different food scientists from three different competitive food companies on the shelves in the grocery stores came together, did some research, found out that orphans are particularly deficient and 17 vitamins. They also have almost no digestive enzymes that are still working in their system, and they have intestinal tract problems. So in the recipe that we serve, it's not just rice and beans, which a lot of people do, and they feed to orphans, and that's fine. But we have rice, we have beans, we have vegetables, we have chicken, we have soy protein. And on top of that, we add probiotics for the intestinal tract. We add digestive enzymes to help the body do something that the body can't do on its own. And we add 17 vitamins that they're deficient in. This is why this meal starts to actually allow the orphan not to just feel full, but they start to get well from the effects of the malnutrition. And this is why I'm so passionate about doing what we're doing, because the more children we feed this recipe to, the more they start to get well. And when they start to get well, they start to learn about the love of Jesus. They start to learn about not only the love of Jesus, but what a school is and how they can go. And there's all sorts of other things that the Lord starts to open the doorways to. But without the food, they don't hear any of the rest of it.
You know, the brother that we work with in India, Yesupalam, was an untouchable. And he was so weak as a child, he couldn't work like his siblings did. So they sent him to school. One day on the way to school, he collapsed on the roadside and was found dying by a Canadian missionary who brought him to a hospital. And he was so close to death because of malnourishment. It took a while for him to be rehabilitated. He then, as he got a little older, became so hostile to the caste system that he became a Naxalite, a violent Maoist communist. He was an alcoholic atheist. This is, you know, 11, he became a communist. And then in his teen years and early 20s, just an ungodly, lost man. Jesus appeared to him in his mid-20s. He's got an extraordinary ministry now. They provide 2,000 meals a day for the people they care for. They've planted 1,500 churches in tribal regions. They have schools that teach the handicapped. They have hospitals, nursing schools, on and on. It's amazing to see what's come out of this life. But he could have been dead through malnourishment, and the literally hundreds of thousands of lives that are being touched now through his ministry wouldn't be touched. You're talking about the very same thing here with a kid that one of our listeners can help. That kid could be a world changer if just given a meal.
No question about it, Dr. Brown. And beyond that, what you have is you have the next generation of thinkers. You have the next generation of problem solvers, the next generation of innovators and people that will come up with technologies and maybe find cures for diseases. You have the next generation of people that will preach the gospel to those that are looking for it. You have those that are going to shape the world in profound ways. And it's none of their fault that they don't have a mom or a dad. It's none of their fault that their parents were taken due to AIDS or to war or to desertion. It wasn't anything that the child did. And I keep coming back to that idea about what Jesus said. If you choose to harm a child, you know, it's better for you to have the big, huge stone that they made mill out of with the grain, to put that around your neck and thrown into the ocean than to harm the hair of a child. Harm comes in multiple ways. You can physically abuse someone, or you can neglect them. And it's one thing if we don't know, but Dr. Brown, as soon as I became really aware of the conditions and the circumstances, I felt driven to put my faith into action, to put the truth of who I believe Jesus is, that I advocate for all the time in the public sphere on talk radio or at Fox News, and to take that to a whole different level and say, friends, if we're not about changing the world, we're not obeying Jesus. We're not following Yeshua faithfully if we're not loving those that he loved.
And let me just jump in here because we've got a break. My guest, Kevin McCullough, of course, well-known radio host, author. Go to this website right now, dogood.com, dogood.com. Every dime, dollar, $10, $100 you give will be doubled. There's an anonymous donor this hour only who will do that. Or call this number, 1-800-503-1948. Interesting, just did a debate with a friend about the modern state of Israel. 1948's the date. 1-800-503-1948. Sponsor some meals for an orphan. Sponsor an orphan for a year. You'll feel a whole lot better at Christmas this year knowing, hey, our money is keeping a child alive, giving them hope, healing, and a future in another part of the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We're going to do something thoroughly Jewish. And I'm going to read to you from the New Testament letter of Jacob, written to Jewish believers. You say, well, New Testament letter of well, you know it is James, but it's actually Jacob. Should be Jacob in English. It's Jacob in Greek and most languages around the world. Jacob, chapter 1, writing to Jewish believers scattered throughout the world. James 1:27, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. It's a question I've asked myself many times in my 41 years in the Lord now. How much does my faith, my following of the Lord, line up with what's important to Him? How much do I have His heart? We are preempting our normal programming. We're not giving any special resource offers or numbers for you to call. We're focusing all our attention and working together with radio host, author, Kevin McCullough, who is putting in about 18 hours today and has put in countless hours in recent months to say, hey, we've got to do something about starving kids around the world. You know, we've seen the pictures, we're almost used to it, but these are kids whose lives are just as precious as the little kids who were massacred in Newtown, Connecticut, and we grieve and we mourn and we cry because these precious lives were cut short, a tragedy that, of course, if we could have seen in advance, could have been averted. Here we have a tragedy on such a massive level, we can't relate to it. Sometimes the kids look different than us, or different color than us, or different culture than us, but beloved by God just as much as our own kids and grandkids are beloved by God, and they are dying by the day, by the thousands, simply because you and I haven't done something to help. Because if we do, they will live. Kevin, how is it that you caught such a burden to do this? You're a busy guy. You're all over the place in terms of media and work that you're doing. How did you catch such a passion to do this? It's got to be time-consuming and demanding.
Well, I come by it very differently. I adopted an orphan from a third-world country when I was a young adult. And going to see where he lived, and we were actually trying to adopt two children at the time, he and his sister. His sister died before we could finish the paperwork to get back to Haiti to adopt them. And so only my son was able to come. But I've always lived with the idea of what orphans deal with. And in this last year, I just, through interaction with people that had been to some of the same places I had been, and we'd seen the same things, we just put it before the Lord and said, show us a way that we can use what God has given us. And by we, I mean the actor Stephen Baldwin, 60 films in Hollywood, 20 years in the business, ABC Television's Danny Johnson, who now is a talk radio host, heard on a lot of these same stations each weekend, and myself, and we said, what can we do? What can we do using the leverageable assets that we have for the kingdom? And so we said, let's start feeding kids that are hungry, because we saw that in Scripture that was always something that Jesus was important to Jesus. So we started doing it, and the more we did it, the more addictive it became, and the more that I do it, even today, and I only had like 3.5 hours of sleep last night, I'm more and more pumped now than when we started this morning. And I just want people to catch the vision. When you feed children, you're doing what God intends for us to do. And when you feed the ones that are orphans, you're doing exactly what Jesus said. If you love me, then do this. And if you want to love Yeshua, then feed his children. And that's what drives us to do it.
All right, friends, we come back. We'll tell you exactly how you can do this. But this hour, in fact, next 25 minutes, every gift you give will be doubled. Every kid you help will become two kids. Every year you sponsor will become 2 years.
Oh God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You want to be revolutionary? You want to do something radical? You want to really demonstrate you're a follower of Jesus? Feed an orphan. Care for a needy kid. Give help and healing and hope to someone that could well be gone, dead, stolen from this world if we don't do something. And it's an opportunity, it's a privilege, and in point of fact, the vast majority of us as believers are far more active in other areas of Christian ministry or service or other activities, most of which center around me, myself, and I, than we are just in practical good work. So what do we do? How do we help? Well, Kevin McCullough is helping us. He put together with other colleagues from which they receive no money for doing this. They put together a coalition, a website, dogood.com. That's simple, dogood.com, where for 25 cents you pay for a healthy, nourishing, healing meeting for a critically needy orphan. This is with pastors on the ground in different third world nations, so they know who they're dealing with. This is not just a statistic out there somewhere. Kids are really being reached and cared for. $92 supports an orphan, pays for healthy meals. You can imagine the hope these kids get. Healthy meals for an entire year. And every orphan that we sponsor in these next 22 minutes, there's an anonymous donor who will match that. The number to call, 1-800-503-1948. 1-800-503-1948. Or go to dogood.com. Kevin, do you actually have testimonies about kids who've been helped, or you can put some faces and names
actually
on this?
There's one story that just occurred this year that I love to tell because it really shows the dramatic power of what doing Jesus' work and being Jesus' hands and feet in these areas is about. In the Congo, there's a little boy named Talay that was part of a large family. Maybe seven kids total, I think, originally, and the father was deceased. I don't know the exact reason. It may have been AIDS. It may have been war. But in the Congo, they have a lot of complicated issues in that country.
Yeah.
And the mother just grew too weak and feeble to be able to care for all of the children that she had. And she was kind of forced with a little bit of a Sophie's choice. If I get rid of one child, I'll probably be able to take care of the rest. And so she did. She took little Talay down to the river, put him on the river's bank. He was still just an infant, or very, very young at least, and thought the crocodiles will eat him, and that'll be that. By God's grace, another human being came walking by within just a matter of a little while, found him, took him to one of the orphanages that had been opened by a woman who has dedicated her life. She loves the Lord. She's trying to take care of 15 to 19 kids on an annual basis, and she has like no money, no support, but she's just finding ways to get it done. Well, we came, one of our sponsoring coalition partners, Food for Orphans, came along this woman's story and understood that the kids she was helping were really in severe danger. I mean, they were in danger of being eaten by crocodiles. Mm. And so we started to see what we could do. Well, that child was rescued earlier this year. And the doctor, I think towards the end of the fall, was able to check out his health and gave him a clean bill of health. And he's thriving. He's kind of like on track to become what every young little boy should be able to become. And we're really thankful for that. But if it wasn't for people diligently sending a quarter to give him a meal every day, that would have been prevented. And so that's the kind of kids that we're helping. They come from all over, varying circumstances. The AIDS pandemic in sub-Saharan Africa, you talk about the untouchables in India, I think there's something close to 3 million children that have that classification in India. And so there's these ideas that they're lower class, they're secondary citizens, they don't deserve the same rights as other people. These are the ones that Jesus died for. These are the ones that he loved with all of his heart. And he said, you know, don't suffer, don't do anything to inhibit the children that want to come to me. And if we cannot feed them long enough to tell them about the gospel, how will they ever hear it? That's what I'm haunted by on a regular basis. So, friends, it's real simple. It's just a phone call. It's just a gift. Dr. Brown, there's going to be people that spend money this Christmas on stupid, ridiculous things, things that people don't need, things that are going to be thrown away. And did you know this? Did you know that 40% of all food purchased in the United States ends up being thrown out? 40% of our food consumption that we buy from the markets, from restaurants, etc., ends up hitting the garbage. That stat alone just floored me. I just read that about a week ago, and I'm all like, right, how can we live in such affluence and not recognize that for a quarter we can feed a hungry kid?
Right. So here's the way we normally deal with it. Like, you're not going to lay a guilt trip on me when I was a kid. You know, a mother would say their children starving in India, and you know, we come back with, well, then send them the food. And well, hang on. Here's something we can all do. I mean, are we actually followers of Jesus or not? Scripture says, "Don't love in word, but in deed and in truth." And Jesus says, "If you've done it for one of the least of these, you've done it for me." And he's talking about practical things that we can do. John says, "How can we claim to have the love of God for this person we can see in need, and then claim to love God that we can't see?" James, Jacob says, "Show me your faith by your works." So this is something we can all do. And the
Jesus said,
thing,
"If you really want to worship me, care for widows and orphans."
Right. So the in short. This is something everybody can do. See, the way this is set up, you don't have to be able to sponsor a kid for a year for $92. Maybe someone listening saying, wait, I could feed 10 kids for $920. I wanted to give a generous gift to charity before the year's out. I could sponsor 10 kids, and if I sponsor 10, an anonymous donor these next 15 minutes will double that. That's 20 kids that I will have a personal vested interest in their lives, keeping them healthy, whole, with a gospel hope and future for this next year. That's amazing. But someone else says, well, I got $3. The way you've set it up, it all goes into the same pot, so that as monies accumulate, then more people are fed. But each one, there's going to be another meal. It's not like, well, we didn't reach the threshold, so we don't do it. Right. Every dime that comes in is going to help. So let's light up the phones here. 1-800-503-1948. 1-800-503-1948, or literally a minute or less. I did it earlier. Dogood.com. Go to that website, and everything that comes in now through this radio broadcast, through the Line of Fire, through all of you dear listeners, $5, 50 cents, $500, every dime is going to be doubled. Back to you, Kevin.
It costs a quarter to feed a child for Christmas Day. And by the way, if you make your gift today, and I know that we're getting close on time, and this sounds crazy, but if you give today, we can feed a child on Christmas from what you give today. But it costs 25 cents to feed a child today. It costs $92 to feed them from this Christmas till next Christmas every single day. That's just 25 cents a day. Friends, it's $2. It's two trips less per month to Starbucks is what it is. You know, everybody's got their coffee habit. If you go two times less each month for the next 12 months, you'll be at $92. If you just choose to spend one night less going out and say we're going to make frozen pizzas tonight and play games as a family instead of going to the movies just once a month, you more than come up with that in just one family night probably. But mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Our passions will lead us to where we will spend our money. Our money will always follow our passions. If we really care about what Jesus loved, if we really love the people that Jesus loved, then we should be passionate about those that he was passionate about, and that's where our money should follow. And I'm not saying don't get Christmas presents for your kids or grandkids. I'm saying how can your heart grow bigger? How can you enfold one other child into your Christmas celebration this time? And Dr. Brown, sit the kids down on the sofa and make this a family thing and teach them that we as a family believe in following Jesus' example and loving those who don't have mommies and daddies. This is a great family exercise for those of us that follow Christ.
Yeah, and for kids, how we have an annual missions conference, Kevin, for our grads. We've got many missionaries we sent out for our ministry school that are serving around the world as missionaries. And every year during October, we help raise funds, and they're doing a lot of amazing projects with poor and needy around the world. Well, one kid for the first time started to get his allowance, and he could not wait to get to the missions conference so he could pledge his allowance. So like $10 a month, he could not wait to pledge. So how about, come on, you kids with piggy banks, you know how many of them would love to help? So let's do something together. 13 more minutes to have this donation matched. 1-800-503-1948. Give a dollar, give $100, do something.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm joined by my special guest, Kevin McCullough. On this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we're doing something thoroughly Jewish, thoroughly biblical, thoroughly Jesus-like, which is working in a tangible way to feed kids that are going to die if we don't, to not just give someone a better life, help them to upgrade to iPhone 5 or get a new Windows 8 system so they've got the latest tech. We're talking about someone that's going to be dead, literally, a kid that's going to be dead, that won't be, that is going to be smiling and recovering from malnutrition, and perhaps a church worker, a pastor, a doctor, a nurse, a university professor, a mom of five. Because of your generosity at this time of the year, it should bring a smile to your face, certainly will to the face of the Lord and the face of these kids. My guest, Kevin McCullough, radio host, author, has gotten a tremendous burden to help in a tangible way. And Kevin, we mentioned this in the first half hour, but for listeners that just tuned in now, since you caught this burden earlier this year to make a difference, having adopted an orphan in yourself in the past, what's happened so far this year?
Well, we've fed close to 6,000 orphans so far. And we got into the final stretch of the year, and everybody in the coalition said, what else can we do? So we said, let's try to feed 800 more. So we went back to our feeding partners and said, can you find 800 more kids? And they said, there's 60 million that are going to go to bed tonight without food. I think we can find 800 more. And so they did. And so we've been, in conjunction with your show and the Truth Radio Network and some news talk radio stations and some different radio networks across the country, we have been on air today. I will capstone, I think, something like 18 hours of talking about this cause and advocating for this before we're all said and done. And Dr. Brown, I got to tell you something. God works in amazing ways. Somebody just walked in the commercial break, and Granny Betty, Grandma Betty, who lives in Greensboro, North Carolina, came down to the Truth Network and hand wrote a check for $500 for a child to be matched in your broadcast today. So, you know, that's a little over five kids. It's about five and a half children. That's going to be almost 11 children with the match that's in play right now. But you know, Granny Betty, if you're listening, I'm blown away. I'm literally humbled. It almost made me start crying, and I don't cry easily. So that's just a beautiful thing, and it's the body of Yeshua coming together and saying, hey, how can we really follow through on what His heart was?
I just got a note from someone in the building here from once we broadcast with a new family and not a lot of money. Doesn't even have a credit card, sent me a note saying, I don't get paid till tomorrow. Will the matching donation still be good? I said, well, can you pay by credit card? No, I don't have a credit card. And got a note that said, just made a donation by debit so I could get involved today. I just got that note myself, and I'm going to do something again tomorrow.
Yeah, and if they want to call it in and say, you know, I need to send a check, can you send me the envelope? We can even do that. Awesome. But call in this hour to get credit against the match so that we can know, you know, how many children we actually reach this hour.
And again, you're serious when you say that every quarter, every dollar helps.
I'm not just joking. I went to go get a Diet Mountain Dew out of the Pepsi machine earlier, and a quarter fell on the floor because it popped out of the machine. And I started to walk away and go, "It's too far into the machine. It's too much work." And then I realized, no, that's someone's Christmas Day dinner. So I went back and got it, and I'm putting it towards the next child that we're that my family is gonna feed today. We actually set a goal for ourselves as a family back in April. We'd like to feed X number of orphans just as our family, and we're very, very close to that goal. It's taken some changes in lifestyle on our part. We've had to, I haven't visited a Starbucks since April. I just stopped going, and suddenly I found myself with a few extra dollars each week, and that turned into a few dozen dollars each month, and that's turned into a number of kids that we're able to help. And it's not, the number's not important. The important thing is the Lord gave us a vision, and we're doing everything we can to try to get there. I want to pull as many people that want to go with us on this journey as possible, because it's just been the most amazing thing.
And the Truth Radio Network has made a substantial donation to help others get this message, to use programming time to cut away from other things so we can make a tangible difference. The number to call, friends, 1-800-503-1948. That's 1-800-503-1948. One more time, 1-800-503-1948. The first moment you get, pick up the phone, call, give what you can. Again, $92 will provide full nutritional, healthy meals for a critical care orphan. Pastors on the ground that are working with Kevin McCullough and his team have identified the kids in most need, and this is literally the difference between life and death. You can also go to the website dogood.com. That's dogood.com. Kevin, we've got a couple of minutes, but let our listeners know again what's in these meals and how it's not just a matter of getting them, you know, a candy bar or a milkshake. Yeah. We're talking about changing their lives.
No, we are. Some food scientists that compete against each other from major food companies on the store shelves wanted to help. And so they helped us develop the recipe that's going out. But it contains chicken, vegetables, rice, soy protein, and a number of other things. But the added elements that are different about our recipe is that we've also added probiotics to help the intestinal health of the child. We've added digestive enzymes because in many cases, especially where you have children with distended bellies, their enzymes have just dried up. They don't have them anymore, not working in their system to help them digest food. And then there's vitamins that they need to help build their immune system. And so getting them that nutrition into the mix of the recipe is what is really unique. But Dr. Brown, the fact that we can do that for 25 cents a meal, that's
amazing.
That's just crazy. And so don't drop that quarter on the floor. Put that towards feeding a child. We can feed a child on Christmas Day for 25 cents. We can feed that child until Christmas Day of next year for only $92.
You know, I just went out for lunch today, went to a local Japanese restaurant here and got hibachi chicken lunch, and it was $10, good deal. Then added on, you know, a couple dollar tip, whatever. Didn't think twice about it. It's a lot of food for that amount, I thought. But I'm thinking, okay, that's 40 meals.
Yeah.
40 meals for one of these kids. Kevin, we're out of time, but God bless you for what you're doing.
Dr. Hopefully Brown, thank you for the time today.
Stepped up. Yeah, it's a joy, and we commend you for it. The Lord will reward you. And thank you for allowing us to share in this. Again, the number to call, 1-800-503-1948. 1-800-503-1948. Online, dogood.com. One more time, 1-800-503-1948. Every $92 will give full food for one orphan for one entire year, 25 cents for a meal. Whatever you give will be doubled by an anonymous donor. But you got to call now for that special backing offer. My bottom line today, Jesus said, if you've done it for one of the least of these, my brothers, you've done it for me. Let's do this as unto the Lord and give new life and new hope.